Hello and welcome to the Dr. Nyman Show. Today is Monday, February 27th, 2017. Dr. Nyman just basically wanted to go over some of the differences in some of the clusters. We got some more information today from WHO. They issued an update on some of the high-path human cases. And like I said, I think Dr. Nyman just wanted to go over some of the new information and maybe dispel some of the, because there's some missing information and some confusion, but he'll go into that. Dr. Nyman, what's on the agenda for today?
Well, Ryan, just as you said, I think we're really going to just focus on this WHO report and kind of briefly discuss the questions that they raise. The report really is on the two cases that were reported previously. This is a background. There was a businessman that was from Taiwan and went to Guangdong province, and he came back, and he was identified as the first H7N9 case in Taiwan this season or this year. They had had a couple cases back in 2013 and a couple more in 2014. They hadn't had any recent ones, and then in 2017 they had a case. And the case created quite a buzz because they released the sequence, and the sequence showed that it was high path. H7N9, which is the first time high-path H7N9 had ever been identified. And then subsequent analysis of the sequence shows that not only did it have a polybasic cleavage site that made it high-path, but it also had a change in the N9, which was R292K, which was a change that was associated with Tamiflu resistance. And then its PB2 had E67K, which is a change that's associated with mammalian adaptation, and the virus grows to replicate quicker at a lower temperature. It actually is optimal at 33 degrees centigrade, which is closer to mammalian body temperature, which is 37 degrees centigrade, in contrast to avian, which is 41 degrees. Centigrade. 41 degrees is actually the optimal temperature for that polymerase if it's got an E at position 67. And when it switches over to K, that makes mammalian, all the seasonal flu, it's got a K at that position. Other than the swine flu, it seems to have made a few other modifications. But in general, the flu that grows well in mammals has a K at that position. And that's very clear for both the various serotypes with high-path H5 as well as H7 and 9. And in fact, even the H7N7 case, which was a veterinarian who died as a result of the outbreak in 2003 in the Netherlands, actually had E67K also. So it's a change associated with the avian virus jumping to humans and being selected, so it can grow more quickly. So that high path raised some concerns, and literally a couple of days later, Guangdong CDC released a full sequence from a 56-year-old male from Qingdong, and that sequence was very, very much like the Taiwan sequence. It also had the Tamiflu resistance in the E67K and had the same polybasic cleavage site. And that case actually was a fatal case in contrast to the Taiwan, which is actually in critical condition at the time. Then a few days later, the WHO in Beijing released two more sequences, so that brought the number of public sequences up to four, and the two sequences they released, one was a 43-year-old female from Zhaoqing, and they reported that, or subsequent reports indicated that that case had recovered. The sequence there showed, again, the Tamiflu resistance and the polybasic plebiscite, but it didn't have the E67K, which may have been why she recovered. The virus still wouldn't grow quite as quickly in mammals, and that might have contributed to the recovery. And then they released a sequence that they initially said was from a 56-year-old male, that sounded a lot like the sequence the CDC released, and in fact, the two sequences were virtually identical. Four of the gene segments actually were identical, the H7, the MP, the NP, and the NS. And then three of the sequences only had one nucleotide difference, the N9, the PB2, and the PA. And the remaining segment, the PB1, just had two changes. So the sequences from the two samples were virtually the same. There was a little bit of a discrepancy in the sense that some of the reports from the media suggested that that this case was actually still alive and was in the hospital. And then today's report that came from WHO was on the two cases that were from HIPAA, and they noted that the 43-year-old female was really part of a cluster. And that relationship had been reported a week ago, but they had indicated that the 43-year-old female in that report had high path. And in fact, at the time, they hadn't really released the sequences to show that there was high path. So, the fact they didn't talk about high path in their report a week ago wasn't that surprising. But when they did mention it today, that indicated that even the 43-year-old female who was discharged from the hospital was part of a cluster that included a fatal case. Her sister was 45 years old, and she had tested positive for H7N9 and had died. And the younger case had cared for her older sister. And so it's likely that it's likely, if not almost certain, that the 45-year-old female was also a high path case. And in this instance, the two of them formed a cluster, and one died and the other was discharged, but the discharged didn't have that same JADE E67. And then the second case that they discussed today was the 46-year-old/47-year-old. They reported him as a 47-year-old male. The original report from CHP really also had this person as being 57 years old. And in fact, the sequence, which was originally listed as being 56-year-old male collected on January 7th, was then, that characterization sheet was edited, and they changed it to 57-year-old and collection date on the 12th, to January 12th. So they moved the collection date up 5 days. And they changed the age. So really, there's three different reports that all say 57M, the CHP report, the WHO update, and the WHO sequence all refer to this case as 57-year-old male. And what was a little bit raised some eyebrows was that the report today said that this case was still alive, that the case was in critical condition as of February 22nd. So there's still this glaring inconsistency that there are two different ages. Guangdong CDC says 56, WHO says 57. 1 year difference in age isn't that striking, and there can be that type of variation in these reports. But what kind of stood out is the fact that Guangdong CDC said the patient was dead in the characterization sheet of a sample collected January 14th, implying that by January 14th, the patient had already died. And certainly had died before the issuing of the report that said he was dead, and that report was dated on the 19th of February. And then the WHO came out today and said that this patient was still alive 3 days after that report, that on February 22nd, that patient was in critical condition. So it kind of leaves open the possibility that there are actually two different cases that may have actually been another cluster. One was 56, one was 57. The 56-year-old died in January. The 57-year-old was still alive. And the fact those two sequences were so close together, and both cases were from the same location, and collections were made in a fairly tight time frame, it would suggest that these two were a cluster. Or, in fact, they are two different sequences, you know, slightly different sequences from the same case by two different labs. And it's unclear what the source of the inconsistency is, why one lab said he died in January and the other one says he's alive in late February. And so it's still a little bit open as to whether the this case is really one patient that could be dead or alive. It's not really clear if the patient, if it's from one patient, whether he's dead or alive, or whether he's 56 or 57. And if it's really two different cases, then the 56-year-old hasn't really been reported by WHO. They haven't talked about a second case in this area. And, you know, obviously haven't talked about them being a cluster because they haven't said there's two, they said there's only one. So that's really the update. At a minimum, there's almost certainly one additional high path case. There's at least one cluster. If there's really two, then it's kind of ominous numbers, even though the sample size is small. That would mean that in Guangdong province, you know, not counting the case that got exported to Taiwan. Within Guangdong, without the export, there would actually be four cases that formed two clusters, and one cluster has a recovered and a fatal case, and the other cluster has a critical and a fatal case. And so, you know, the case fatality rate would be pretty high. It would be those with known outcomes, it would be two deaths and one discharge. And of all four cases, it would be two deaths, a discharge in a critical case. And the case in Taiwan is also, you know, as of last report, also critical. And so really for outcomes, if there are really five cases, you would have, outcome-wise, you have two fatal and one discharge, and then those without outcomes yet, both of those are in critical condition. So it's a little bit, even though the case fatality rate is high for the low path, this raises the possibility that the case fatality rate may be even higher for the high path. And if there's really two clusters, then that would strongly point towards transmission being easier, possibly simply due to the fact that there's more virus because it's high path and maybe a high frequency at E67K. And it also would have a high fatality rate where, you know, of the three outcomes, two are fatal. And that's, you know, probably about twice as high as the rate of the low path. So unfortunately, the numbers are small and they're not even clear if there's four or five cases, but regardless of whether it's four or five, the fact that there's already, if there's only four, there's already a cluster in two of them. And there was some information about the Taiwan case that a couple of the contacts in Guangdong province had symptoms, and they haven't really, you know, given an update on that and as to whether those two symptomatic cases were ever tested and, you know, what their status was when samples were drawn. But the high path is still up to concern because it all of the human cases to date have had Tamiflu resistant marker. All of the more severe cases that are either critical or fatal have had E67K. And they all have the identical polybasic cleavage site. And it's very early. Unfortunately, they really can't tell whether the patient's high path unless they do at least some sequence analysis or at least look at the size of the insert and have good information on where the exposure is. If it's dying poultry, then there's probably a good chance that it is high path. So it's kind of early in the high path game, but today's update, there's at least one cluster out of four cases, and if there's five cases, there's actually two clusters. It was a little bit disconcerting that a small number of cases like that would produce a relatively large number of cases or high frequency of cases that did form clusters. So that's it for the quick little update to see where we stand.
Okay, well, thank you for the information. Listeners always can go to becomeanmx.co, again, for all the latest information. As always, we'll have more updates as they come. It sounds like, based on what we've been seeing over the past week or so with this virus, that things could get quite interesting here pretty quickly. So, like I said, the information is coming in relatively quickly, it would seem, and like I said, we'll keep you updated as the situation unfolds. All right, well, thank you, everyone.